Our study this morning is COVID-19 and church assemblies. On April 3rd, 2020, Governor Parsons issued a stay-at-home order. Individuals currently residing within the state of Missouri shall avoid leaving their homes or places of residence. When individuals need to leave their homes or places of residence to work, to access food, prescriptions, health care, and other necessities, or to engage in outdoor activity, they should at all times practice social distancing. Individuals may also go to and from an individual's place of worship, provided that limitations on social gatherings and social distancing are properly adhered to. Later in that document, he describes the limitations that he has in mind. In accordance with the guidelines from the President and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, all individuals in the state of Missouri shall avoid social gatherings of more than 10 people. For purposes of this order, social gatherings shall mean any planned or spontaneous event or convening that would bring together more than 10 people in a single space at the same time. After those orders, or after that stay-at-home order was issued, in response to that, many churches in our area began canceling services. The elders, here's a statement from one, the elders have agreed to comply with the government's instructions to suspend all public meetings of more than 10 people in order to protect ourselves from possible exposure to the invisible enemy, COVID-19. On another website from a church in our area, the state of Missouri, Clay County, and Kansas City, Missouri all currently prohibit gatherings of 10 or more people, and we have suspended our in-person Sunday and Wednesday worship and Bible study assemblies. From two more, due to the present concerns, the services of the, and I'm not interested in naming the names of these brethren, but so I blank that out. The services of the such and such Church of Christ have been canceled for an unknown duration. This decision is based on compassion for brothers and sisters who are at risk of infection and even death. And then one other congregation just simply says our services will be conducted online until further notice. In response to that, our elders decided that some of our in-person assemblies were to be canceled. And the reason for that was stated in the statement that they issued, that we have made the decision that we will postpone our weekly Sunday morning Bible classes, Sunday afternoon services, and Wednesday night Bible study. We believe as your elders, these services are a liberty that we as the elders have chosen for our congregation to meet. Later, these were moved to a virtual medium where we have our adult Bible classes via Facebook Live and our children's Bible classes through the software called Zoom. But we continued our Sunday morning worship assemblies as we are gathered here this day. Why? Our elders made the statement, however, we do believe that meeting for worship on the Lord's Day is mandatory, as seen in the New Testament by more than one binding example, Acts 20 and 7, 1 Corinthians 16 and 2, Hebrews 10 and 25. And thus, we must continue to assemble on the Lord's Day. For us, it was a matter of authority. We believe that we are commanded to worship. And we believe that we have no authority to cancel what God has commanded. And so you might ask, then why this lesson? The elders know I submitted this lesson to them yesterday for their approval, and so they know exactly what's going to be covered in this lesson. So what is the purpose of this lesson? Well, the purpose of this lesson is to explain why we made the decision to continue worshiping. It is to explain why we evidently think differently than many of our brethren. But I want you to understand that The purpose of this lesson is not to condemn the leadership of other local churches or their actions. I know many of these men. I have spoken personally to many of these men. I've discussed with many of these men the fact that I see things differently than they see things. And so I recognize that they labored over this. These decisions weren't made easily. And so I am not condemning. I don't agree, but I'm not condemning at this point. The leadership and the purpose of this lesson isn't to condemn them, and that's why I didn't state where these churches and the statements that I've drawn from their websites, where they came from, because that's not the purpose of this lesson, is to condemn the leadership of other local churches or the actions that they decided that they needed to take. Our reasons may appear to condemn those who think otherwise, but such is not the purpose or intent. I recognize that as soon as I say, here is why we did this, someone's going to say, oh, so you're saying that they, all I'm saying is, here is why we did. Now, indirectly, that might be the case. But if I say that this is where we felt like, that we felt like we did not have the authority to do that, then I don't want anyone to jump and say, oh, so then you're saying these brethren who did it didn't have authority. I'm saying we felt like we didn't have authority to cancel that. The purpose of this lesson is not to condemn those who felt otherwise. Our differences have been discussed, brethren. I have had many discussions with many gospel preachers via Facebook, via email, over the phone. These discussions have been had, and maybe they need to continue to be had, and maybe this has raised an issue in reference to the way in which we view authority, that maybe this will be the impetus for us to study some of these things. But that's not the purpose of this lesson, is to demonstrate why I believe that everybody else is wrong and why we're right. I'm just explaining to you why we have continued to do what we are doing. As I said, I believe that this is a question of authority. Without question, we must have authorization for all that we do. And this caused a great deal of difficulty among congregations across the nation as to what do we have the authority to do. We must have authorization for all that we do. Colossians 3 and 17, Matthew 7, 21 through 23, and Matthew 21, 23 through 27 all state that. Colossians 3 and verse 17 says, whatever you do in word or in deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through Him to God the Father. Jesus said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. But he who does the will of my Father will enter heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons? And in your name perform many miracles? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Lawlessness is the word defined there is to act without authorization to act. You acted. No one is denying the fact that you acted. No one is denying the action. No one is denying what was done. The question is, was it authorized? And Jesus is saying to these individuals, I'm not denying the fact that you acted. I'm just saying you acted without authorization. In Matthew chapter 21, I love this story because even the religious leaders understood the matter of authority. Then when Jesus had come in the triumphal entry, and when he cast out those that were in the temple, the second time that he cleanses the temple at the very beginning of his ministry, and now he cleanses the temple near the end of his ministry. And so they are within the right to ask, by what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority? Jesus said, I will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John was from what source? From heaven or from man? Why didn't Jesus give another source? Why did he limit it to just those two sources? Why did he limit their choices? In fact, why didn't they question Jesus about, well, Jesus, you only gave us two choices? Because even they understood there are only two choices. It has either come from God or it has come from man. And so they reason within themselves. And they say, if we say from heaven, he will say to us, then why didn't you believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the people, for they all regard John as a prophet. And Jesus answering, they said, we do not know. And he also said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. Why didn't he tell them then? Because the question was never about authority. Jesus knew in these men's minds, the question was never about authority. If they really were concerned about authority, if this was really the thing that was driving this question, then they would honestly answer. But because that really wasn't what was driving the question, Jesus doesn't answer their question. But he acknowledges the fact that when it comes to the matter of action, that action must be precipitated by authority. Someone has to authorize that action if you're going to act. And so, as we think about the matter in reference to our assembling, are we authorized to assemble? And I think all throughout God's Word, especially in the New Testament, that just seems to be a given, that they assemble. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 18, 20, and 33, Acts 20 and 7, Hebrews 10, 23 through 25, and 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 are just a few scriptures that indicate the fact that the brethren assemble. Jesus, or Paul, is talking about the Lord's Supper. He says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 18, from the first place when you come together as a church, I hear that divisions exist among you, and in part I believe it. Verse 20 tells us that therefore when you meet together, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper, though that should have been the purpose of their gathering, is the point that Paul is making. The purpose of your gathering is to partake of the Lord's Supper, but when you gather together, that's not the purpose. That's the problem, Paul says. He closes that by saying in verse 33, so then, my brethren, when you come together to eat, when you come together to partake of the Lord's Supper, wait for one another. Acts 20 and verse 7 is an example of Paul traveling, is an example of Paul waiting, is an example of a congregation partaking of the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. In Hebrews chapter 10, verses 23 and 20 through 25, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for your promise is faithful, and let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Why was it that Paul could give instructions about the collection in reference to when that could be done in 1 Corinthians chapter 16? He could do that because he understood that they were going to meet. That was just what was done. That was done in every congregation. On every place where there was a group of God's people meeting, every Sunday they met together to partake of the Lord's Supper. Paul knew that. And Paul said, since this is something that happens all of the time, then I want you to understand you can also at that particular time gather together the collection that I'm gathering so that there doesn't have to be a gathering when I get there. On the first day of the week, each of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper so that there be no collections when I come. Why did Paul know that this could be done and that the logistics of this could happen on the first day of the week, and that they would all be gathered together on the first day of the week, and that wouldn't be the time to do that? Instead of when I get there, then I'll have to go to this brother's house and that brother's house and this brother's house and that brother's house, and house by house by house, I'll make the collection for whatever they want to give. How did he know that he could just come on the first day and just get all of that on the first day? Because he knew they'd be assembled. He knew they'd be together. And he knew that that assembly would be to remember the Lord's death. It's not surprising then that near the end of the first century, and you see this in a couple of the church fathers, Ignatius is one, statements made about Sunday suddenly is a reference, or the reference to Sunday is referred to as the Lord's Day. In fact, it's an inspired thing. Because in Revelation chapter 1 and verse 10, when this book was written near the end of the first century, notice that it is John himself that probably in the early 90s, 90 AD, John says that I was in the Spirit when? On the Lord's Day. Why would that be a proper description for Sunday? Because in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 21, it is the cup of the Lord that we partake of at the Lord's table around the Lord's Supper. And so that's why then this became known as the Lord's Day. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, Revelation 1 and verse 10, and I heard behind me a loud voice like the sound of a trumpet, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 21. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of the demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons. The cup of the Lord's cup, the table of the Lord's table. Why is it referenced to that? Because in 1 Corinthians 11 and 20, they were partaking of what? The Lord's Supper at the Lord's table with the Lord's cup on the Lord's day. They were assembled. God wants us to remember His Son's death every Sunday. And so as we think about this being a question of authority, the question then is, do we have the authority to cancel or to suspend what God has required? I want you to consider a principle that though the actual application of the principle was given in regards to marriage, but this was a general principle in which in areas wherein God has acted, man cannot countermand God's actions. Consider the principle in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 6. We're going to begin reading in verse 3. Some Pharisees came to Jesus testing him and asking, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all? And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning, he made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? Understand, this wasn't a question of, is he able to do that? Yeah, they were able to do that, and they were doing that. So it wasn't a question of ability. It was a question of authorization. I know that a man can do this. I want to know, is a man authorized to do this, Lord? I know that we can divorce our wives, but I want to know, is it according to the law? Is it authorized that we are able to do that? Is it lawful? Was the question. It's not the way of saying, is it authorized? Well, what controls this action? I want you to notice that Jesus says, what controls this action is the one who created them and joined them. God's in control of this. This is why in reference to the matter of is it lawful, this is why they ask this question. Why didn't they just say, can we do this? Are we able to do this? Do we have the ability to do that? Why didn't they ask that question? Because that wasn't the question. The question was, even they understood, here is an action that we want to take, but we won't take this if it's not lawful. We won't take this if we're not authorized. And so we want to know, are we authorized to take this action? And so Jesus says, well, who controls that action? Who's in charge of that? The one who created them. Notice where Jesus takes them. And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who created them and made them and joined them said, the two shall be one? The answer to the question is, What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. No. You're not authorized to take that action. I want you to remember the statement that's made in Matthew chapter 21 and verse 25. Heaven's authority will always trump man's authority. This was the issue with these individuals, because if they said, in reference to the baptism of John, that it is from heaven, then what is Jesus going to say to them? Then why didn't you believe it? But if they said it is from men, no, it came from a lower authority, but where did the people put John's baptism? From a higher authority. They put it from God. If we say it's from this lower authority, but the people think that it's from this higher authority, that's going to put us in a difficult position. And so we're just not going to say anything. Even they recognize that if they claimed a lower authority for the baptism of John than what the people identified the baptism of John with, it would cause problems. The conclusion then is what God has commanded, man doesn't have the authority to cancel. If God has commanded it, if God has joined it, if God has acted, is there anything that man can do? Does he have the authority to do to countermand that which has been commanded? But someone might ask and say, well, Adonis, why would we disobey our government's instructions? We've done our best to obey the restrictions. We, as you have seen, we're trying to be distant, the proper 6 foot apart. Social distancing now is a term that we use. We have talked about the fact of coming in stages, leaving in stages, and leaving when we leave, not standing around and visiting so that we don't press the 6 foot distance. But we are an assembly greater than 10. And we are assembled in spite of our stay-at-home order from our governor. In spite of the fact that we are an assembly and that we are greater than 10, here we are assembled in violation, if you will, to the governor's stay-at-home order. Why would we disobey our government's instructions? And I want you to think about the statement that's made in Acts chapter 5 and verse 29 in reference to the apostles as they were brought in and questioned after having been told in Acts 4 not to teach any longer, and yet they were released from prison, right back out teaching again, and so they were brought right back into the council again. When they were brought in, they stood before the council, and the high priest questioned them, saying, we gave you strict orders. We gave you restrictions. We gave you strict orders not to continue teaching this name, and yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men. What is Peter saying? Peter's saying the very thing that they should understand. That when they looked at the baptism of John and they were going to say, well, if they said it was from heaven, then they would say, you should have believed it. They say it was from men. Oh, but the people think it from a higher authority. That's going to put us in a difficult position, so we just won't say anything. They ought to understand that when it came to the matter of looking at the authority of the high priest or the authority of God was always going to trump them. And Peter says, look, we know what you said, and we know what God has told us to do. We know what you told us to do, and we know what God commanded us to do. I'm sorry, but you yourself should know we ought to always obey God rather than men. The principle is still applicable, brethren, even if the government isn't demanding we stop serving God. Oh, but the government's not saying that we don't need to serve God. The government's not persecuting us for serving God. And so therefore, Acts 5:29 doesn't apply. But brethren, the government is saying if it is an assembly of greater than 10, you should not be together. You should not be worshiping. We ought to obey God rather than men. The government has issued these restrictions for our good. They're trying to protect us from this COVID-19. They're trying to protect us from being infected. And so the Acts 5:29 doesn't really apply to this, because the restrictions that were placed upon the apostles was not for their own good. Brethren, it still is irrelevant to the principle of we ought to obey God rather than men. However benevolent our government's motivation for these restrictions may be, and I believe that. I don't believe that this is some secret government conspiracy, some test to see how much power that they can grab, and they'll use that again later. I don't believe that that's the impetus behind this. I really believe that the purpose of this is to protect the citizens over which that they are governing. I believe that. But that doesn't change the fact of what God wants me to do. I have to obey God rather than man. But someone might ask and say, but aren't we obeying God by obeying the government? If we obey the government, we are obeying God. And there is a point to that. Because God has certainly established government and expects our obedience thereto. Romans 13:1-2. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. And they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 to 14, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. Yes, absolutely. God has established governing authorities, and God has placed us in subjection to them. God has said, I'm going to establish these governments. I'm going to establish these governing authorities for the punishment of evildoers, and I'm going to cause you and tell you, you need to submit to them. But government authority is not higher than God's authority. I want you to think about the statement that Paul makes in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 as he's talking about the resurrection, as he's talking about Jesus and the authority that Jesus has and the authority that God gave Jesus. I want you to notice the statement that he makes. For he must reign until he has put all enemies under his feet. That's Jesus. Jesus must reign until he has put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy will be abolished is death. For he has put all things in subjection under his feet. Everything is under subjection to him, Paul says. Under subjection to Jesus. But Paul says, now wait a minute. Now, when he says all things are put in subjection, it is evident that he is accepted who put all things in subjection to him. All things have been put under subjection to Jesus. All things except for God. Yes, we are under subjection to the government. Yes, it is a subjection that God has required. Yes, they have been given authority. And we have been told to submit to that authority. But the one that is accepted is God Himself. And when God Himself gives a direct order as to what we need to do, when these authorities collide, we obey the higher one. We ought to obey God rather than men. But aren't we showing a lack of brotherly love by assembling? This is the question that some have posed. Aren't we showing a lack of brotherly love? I mean, we're not assembling because of our love for brethren. And so that's why we're not going to assemble. Aren't we potentially and possibly unknowingly putting brethren at risk of contracting COVID-19 given the nature of this virus? Well, I think there's some things to consider in answering that question. Number one, who should determine the level of risk one is willing to take? Who determines that? Should this be legislated? Or is it a matter of liberty? Each choosing for themselves. Is there a sense in which maybe that leaderships and elderships may have overstepped the bounds of what they have been given the authority to legislate on? I'm just saying, is there a sense in which this might have happened? Could this be? The matter of lording it over in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 3, that word lord is to hold in subjection, to be master of. to exercise lordship over. I'm going to tell you the amount of risk that you can have. I'm going to keep that risk. I'm going to legislate the amount of risk involved. Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 3, therefore I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elders and witness of the sufferings of Christ, a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God, which is among you, exercising oversight under compulsion, but voluntarily according to the will of God, not for sordid gain, but with eagerness, not as lording it over those who are allotted to your charge, but proving to be an example of the flock. Again, I want you to notice, I'm just asking, is there a sense in which we are pushing the bounds of what might be considered to be lording it over when we say we're going to cancel services because we don't want to put you at risk? It has been decided for you to choose the level of risk that you're willing to take. Our elders are aware of the risk that may be involved. This is why we're wearing these hot, smothering, glass-fogging mask. That's why we're wearing these things. That's why we have changed the nature of our partaking of the Lord's Supper again today, trying to be even more proactive in being cautious. We recognize, our elders recognize, the level of risk at stake. And they're doing everything that they can to make precautions, but they're letting you determine the level of risk that you are willing to subject yourself to. Second thing to consider, what about those who want to assemble and are willing to take the risk? What about those who want to assemble, but they can't because the congregation where they are members of and no congregations around them are meeting? I know of individuals in that situation who they want to meet. They want to partake of the Lord's Supper with their brethren. They want to worship. But the congregations that are all around them have all canceled their services. They conscientiously feel that they should attend, but they can't. How does that factor into the matter of brotherly love? Are we placing a stumbling block before them because we've made the choice for them that, nope, too much risk involved, and so we're going to cancel that? This is why we have never canceled services at this congregation for inclement weather. And you may see individuals making arguments across Facebook and in various other mediums about, well, we canceled for the weather. What's the difference between canceling for the weather and canceling for this? And I made the comment, but we've never canceled for the weather. So that argument doesn't really fly. What we have always said is, we know, you know, the risk involved. Those that can get here, those that are willing to take that risk, can come. And if you don't want to take that risk, we don't stand up and read a list of names who aren't here and they're not faithful anymore. We don't do that. In fact, what we do is, well, so-and-so's not here probably because of the weather. So-and-so's not here probably because it's slick outside. So-and-so's not here probably because they didn't want to risk it. And that's not by way of condemnation. It's just to state, well, we're few in number because the weather's not that great outside, but there's few of us that can get here, and so we'll get here. Isn't this the same thing? We recognize the risk. You know the risk. Aren't we placing a stumbling block when we say, well, we're going to make the decision for you and tell you that it's made out of love? We have canceled the services that were a matter of liberty. I want to insert in here that that's not because these services weren't important. Not that they weren't important to be here on Wednesday. Oh, well, I don't have to come on Wednesday anymore. Oh, I don't have to come on Sunday night anymore. These were matters of liberty, of choices that our elders have made to give you opportunity to grow. No, they are important within their own right as reference to providing you with growth. But those places wherein we have the liberty to act, our elders have acted. But we have not canceled our Sunday a.m. worship assembly, because God has required we assemble to remember His Son's death, and therefore we have no authority to cancel what is commanded. That's our position. I'm not attacking anyone else. I'm just saying our position is we feel like we have no authority to cancel what God has commanded. Each member must assess the risk they are willing to accept in their service to God, and this cannot be legislated by our leadership. When you come here, you recognize that that there is a level of risk here, that someone may come and they may be infected and not know it. There is a level of risk. You understand that. But you've made the choice that it's worth the risk. The third thing that we have done and why we have not canceled is because we don't want to place a stumbling block before a brother and show less brotherly love by not allowing him to choose the own level of risk that he wants to accept. There are so many more things and so many more points and arguments that have been made in reference to this subject. But in the time that we had allotted today, and in the nature of this, has not been to attack other brethren. I'm not interested in that. I've discussed with the brethren that I have differences on. I've discussed with them, and we see it differently, and that's just the way that it is. I have a great deal of respect for them. Nothing has changed in reference to that. We just see things differently than that. So my intention has not been to attack. But maybe I just thought, well, maybe some have wondered, well, if everybody else is canceling, why are we still having assembly? Why are we still doing what many others have felt like that they don't need to do? And this has just been an explanation of why we are. The fact that we feel this way and the fact that we're doing it this way doesn't mean anything, and it's not a statement indirectly at others. It's just a statement of, here is why we are doing what we are doing. And it's hopefully a way to explain to others why it is, and help them to understand why it is that we have done this. If you're here this morning and your life is not what it needs to be, looks like I never got that live going, so I'm going to have to re-preach this lesson. Now, if you're here this morning and your life is not what it needs to be, then let me suggest to you that you decide to follow Jesus. If you'll decide to follow Him, then nothing else will be of importance than the following of our Lord. And it just puts all things in perspective. If you're here this morning, your life is not what it needs to be, and we can help you make it right, let us know. Come forward. Together we stand while we sing.